VOA News, I'm Michael Brown. A first-of-its-kind civil trial against drug maker Johnson & Johnson is underway here in the U.S. The state of Oklahoma is suing the company over its alleged role in the U.S. opioid epidemic. The lawsuit, which aims to hold opioid manufacturers responsible for the drug crisis gripping the country, could have a large impact on other states seeking similar compensation. In opening statements Tuesday, Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter called the prescription opioid epidemic the worst man-made public health crisis here in the U.S. and in the state of Oklahoma. Israel is moving closer to new parliamentary elections, with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unable to form a government. Netanyahu has until Wednesday to form a coalition deal. Without it, his Likud party will lose its majority. Former coalition partner Avigdor Lieberman has refused to give Likud the support of his party's five parliamentary seats, leaving Netanyahu at risk of losing his position. The last remaining abortion clinic in the state of Missouri says it expects to shut down this week, effectively ending legal abortion in the state. But as the AP's Ed Donahue reports, Planned Parenthood is suing the state to keep the clinic open.
Planned Parenthood says the license for its clinic in St. Louis runs out Friday, and the group's CEO says the state is investigating a large number of possible deficiencies. A new law in Missouri bans abortions on or beyond the eighth week of pregnancy, with no exceptions for rape or incest. Planned Parenthood has filed a lawsuit in an attempt to keep the St. Louis clinic open. The American Civil Liberties Union has submitted a petition for a statewide vote in Missouri on the new abortion law. More than 100,000 signatures are needed. I'm Ed Donahue.
For more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The founder of the Smithsonian Institution's newest museum, which focuses on African-American history, will soon leave the institution's entire system of museums and parks. The Smithsonian Board of Regents appointed Lonnie Bunch its 14th secretary, becoming the museum's first African-American leader in its 173-year history.
It is humbling, exciting. It is something that had never crossed my mind to do, but it also makes me feel good because I get to give back to the institution I care the most about, the Smithsonian.
Bunch, who took over and will take over June 16th, will guide the world's largest museum, education, and research complex, overseeing a $1.5 billion annual budget that helps fund 19 museums, 9 research centers, and the National Zoo. The U.S. military said Tuesday that a total of 6 American troops have been identified so far from the 55 boxes of human remains that North Korea turned over last year. President Trump, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, signed an agreement allowing for recovery of the remains of U.S. soldiers from the Korean War in the early 1950s. Military officials say about 5,300 American troops are believed lost in what is now North Korea. A leading Sudanese army general is criticizing the 2-day strike called by protest leaders after talks between the military and demonstrators to decide the country's future ground to a halt. Protesters are pressing army leaders to hand over power to a civilian-led authority following last month's overthrow of Sudan's longtime president, Omar al-Bashir. Protesters, who are represented by the Forces for Declaration of Freedom and Change, demand limited military representation on the sovereign council that would run the country during a 3-year transition period, but the ruling generals refused to relinquish power. And a U.S. hiker who survived being lost in a dense forest in Hawaii for more than 2 weeks is speaking out for the first time about her ordeal.
This whole journey was extremely spiritual for me, and I never felt alone, and I never felt fearful. It was an opportunity to overcome fear of everything.
Amanda Eller was spotted near a waterfall in deep vegetation and airlifted to safety. Mackenzie Bezos, who just months ago divorced the world's richest man, is pledging to give away half her estimated $37 billion fortune to charity. The former wife of Amazon founder and chief executive Jeff Bezos is among 19 others promising to donate more than 50% of their wealth to the Giving Pledge, an organization which asked the world's wealthiest people to promise half of their wealth during their lifetimes or in wills. I'm Michael Brown reporting.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi President Peter Mutharika takes the oath of office following his re-election.
I also want to thank leaders of various political parties who competed with me in this election. But there can only be one winner at a time. So it's now the time to move on. The election is over.
Rwanda sentences a terror suspect to 30 days in prison pending his trial. A former Sudan rebel leader returns home to Sudan but says he's been told by the military junta to leave. Ghana aims to identify vulnerable population in its first digital census. And Uganda seeks nearly $1 billion for refugee support amid demand for accountability.
We're accountable to refugees to deliver services meeting their rights and their needs, but we're obviously also accountable to donors to ensure that funding is value for money and is used in the right way.
Hans Hasselmann is the senior field coordinator for the UN Refugee Agency in Uganda. And this morning, a discussion with the artist who made a hit video on corruption in Liberia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi President Peter Mutharika was sworn in on Tuesday for a second five-year term after defeating six other candidates in a tightly contested presidential election. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
There was jubilation and ululation from hundreds of people who trooped to Kamuzu Stadium in Blantyre to witness Mutharika and his vice president, Everton Chimulilenji, taking the oath from Chief Justice Andrew Nyilenda.
I, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika,
do solemnly swear
that I will well and truly perform, the functions of the High Office of President.
Mutharika, the leader of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, narrowly won the May 21st presidential election. The incumbent leader got 38.7%, while his opponent, Lazarus Chakwera, leader of opposition Malawi Congress Party, trailed with 35.41%. Vice President Saulos Chilima of the opposition United Transformation Movement Party came third with 20.24%. In his short acceptance speech, Mutharika asked political leaders who contested the May elections to move forward.
I also want to thank leaders of various political parties who competed with me in this election. Most will accept that there can only be one winner at a time. So it's now the time to move on. The election is over. There is a time to fight. There is a time to unite.
A local radio station reported Tuesday that police dispersed Malawi Congress Party supporters who protested the official results. However, the party, which originally demanded a recount, has no further plans to challenge the vote tally. The leader of the United Democratic Front, Atupele Muluzi, finished fourth in the presidential race. Muluzi told state media Tuesday that he is looking forward to Mutharika's leadership in the next 5 years.
I hope that his government will be able to continue to make sure that to stabilize the economy and provide quick wins, especially jobs for young people, as well as reunify our beautiful country following such a challenging election period.
Some Mutharika supporters say although the president has performed well in the past 5 years, they expect even more. Jane Chiwamba is one of the Mutharika supporters. She says she would like to see more rural technical colleges, which Mutharika administration started establishing in rural areas, because these, she says, will help empower youth to be self-reliant citizens. The official inauguration ceremony for Mutharika is scheduled for Friday. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The Ugandan government and the UN High Commissioner for Refugees are calling on the donor community to give $927 million in support of over 1.2 million refugees living in Uganda. But the appeal is complicated by the alleged misuse of previous contributions. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Located next to several countries in conflict, Uganda has become host to huge refugee populations. Currently, there are 792,000 South Sudanese, 417,000 Congolese, and more than 35,000 Burundians, among others. The $927 million US sought would pay for water, sanitation, food, healthcare, shelter, and other basic needs for the refugees. Hens Hesseman is the senior field coordinator for the UN Refugee Agency in Uganda.
Uganda is Africa's largest refugee situation with over 1.2 million refugees, and the number is growing with continued influxes to the country. And over 100 partners, UN and NGO partners, have been supporting the Uganda government in managing this humanitarian situation and deliver life-saving services. That needs to continue.
However, the appeal is weighed down by what donors are calling unsatisfactory investigations over abuse of funds. In early 2018, four Ugandan officials under the Office of the Prime Minister were asked to leave their positions pending investigations into alleged abuse of funds, fraud, and exaggeration of refugee numbers. Uganda's junior minister for refugees, Musa Echweru, says the probes are still ongoing.
We are saying the investigation is systematic and thorough. Those gentlemen and ladies will not step in these offices until they are either cleared or brought to book if they are found to have committed a crime.
He also accuses Uganda's development partners of misusing donor funds.
The partners have also had a challenge. You overcost your administrative response. The money that the international community gives, 3/4 of the money goes to manage your welfare. You drive big cars, you sleep in big hotels.
Hesseman declined to comment on Echweru's remarks. He says the UNHCR has been working with the government to verify actual refugee numbers using a biometric system that the agency named Progress. He said the system will reduce fraud and corruption.
Priority of all the partners is accountability. We're accountable to refugees to deliver services, meeting their rights and their needs, but we're obviously also accountable to donors to ensure that funding is value for money and is used in the right way.
The appeal follows critical remarks from German Ambassador Albert Konze, who said German has re-established financial dealings with the UNHCR, but will not dispense half of the $52 million it had pledged until the Ugandan government limits corruption. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
The deputy chairman of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, or SPLM North, says the military junta in Khartoum has asked him to leave the country. Yasser Amar returned to Khartoum on Saturday after more than 20 years in exile. He says he's back to help in finding a solution to the stalemate on who should lead the transitional government of Sudan following the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. Amar tells viewers South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza that Sudan is his country and he has no other place to call home.
We came to be part of the political process after the revolution.
The leaders of the Transitional Military Council have declared you as unwanted guest in Sudan. How do you feel about that?
That is unfortunate because I spent 32 years in the armed struggle. We need a strategic exit to the political life to transform our movement into a national democratic political movement. Unfortunately, this voice for peace and for political settlement is not being heard by the military council. We need this new development in Sudan to take us into a comprehensive peaceful settlement.
You've been out of Sudan for almost 20 plus years. How was your reception when you landed at Khartoum International Airport?
Hundreds of thousands of youths celebrated my presence. Maybe others feel threatened, but not the peoples of Sudan, who are looking for peace, democracy, social justice, and equal citizenship. Those are the people to whom I came, but the military council are asking me to go outside the country. I have no other place to go. I'm going to stay in Sudan, whatever it takes, and I'm ready to sacrifice whatsoever for our people. We have been doing that for many years.
How is your level of engagement with the new leaders in Sudan, the military leaders? Who have you met so far since you landed in Khartoum?
They refused to meet me, but I met all the opposition political leaders of Freedom and Change, the Sudan Call, the Sudan Revolutionary Front, and the National Consensus, all civil societies, women, youth, name them. I interacted with all of them, and our message is very consistent that we need the peace to be part of the agenda of the revolutions, and we need the marginalized people, the IDPs, the refugees, and the prisoners of war to be released, and war should end together with the transformation and democratization of Sudan.
Tell me a little bit about how you came back to Sudan. Who invited you to come back to Sudan?
No, I didn't come at their invitations. If you would remember, announced that the SBM is sending a delegation of goodwill last April. They refused to welcome this step, and we decided as Sudanese citizens to come to Khartoum Airport. I came and I was admitted into the country. I have no other nationalities. I'm a Sudanese. Now they're asking me to go out. I have no anywhere to go out. I'm from this soil of the Sudan, and I will stick with our people who are aspiring for democracy, equal citizenship, social justice, and for their dignity to be restored after decades of the political Islam tarnishing this society.
That was Yasser Aman, deputy chairman of a faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, NORF. He spoke from Khartoum with John Tanza, managing editor and host of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Today's Wednesday, May 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Rwanda terror suspect Major Calixte Sankara was yesterday remanded to 30 days in prison by a judge pending his trial. Sankara, who is charged with 16 counts related to terrorism, was last week brought before the court to answer to the charges. He pleaded not guilty to all the charges. Eugene Uwimana has more from Kigali.
The court's ruling of 30 days of provisional detention supported the prosecution's claim that Major Sankara might escape justice as he was forcefully extradited to Rwanda, has no known address in the country. The prosecution also expressed the concerns that Major Sankara's release could also complicate the ongoing investigation. The judge dismissed as baseless the argument of Major Sankara's lawyer that he should be provisionally released because he pleaded guilty. Major Calixte Sankara, who is spokesperson of the FLN rebel group, pleaded guilty last week during his initial court appearance. The 16 charges against him include terrorism, murder, kidnap, genocide denial, arson, armed robbery, forgery, and causing bodily harm, among others. The 37-year-old Major Sankara is the man who, since last year, has been declaring in different national media houses that his rebel group was about to overthrow President Kagame's regime through bullets. The FLN, based in the DRC, has carried out terror attacks, mainly in southern Rwanda, and two separate attacks mounted last year left at least 9 people dead. It is not yet known whether Sankara will have to appeal the ruling. However, several critics say many lawyers refused to defend Major Sankara, fearing the eye of the government. But his lawyer, Moise Mundabarashi, told VOA that he's not afraid.
I can't be afraid. I'm a practicing lawyer. I have the right to defend each and everyone. And this is a right that is guaranteed by the Constitution. So I can't really have any problem.
The Sankara case has stabbed another thorn in the already soaring relations between Rwanda, Burundi, and Uganda. Last week, in his initial appearance, he said that he worked with some Burundian and Ugandan military officials for financial and diplomatic support. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Ghana is preparing for its first digital population and housing census next year, joining Swaziland, Malawi, and Kenya as one of the first countries in Africa to collect data electronically. The government says tablets and satellite imagery will be used to count every Ghanaian and help fight inequality. Sophia Christensen reports on the census trials in the capital, Accra.
In a cross district of Old Fadama, the largest slum in the capital, a government official interrupts a group of men playing cards. The official carries a tablet. and asks if anyone has time to test an electronic questionnaire designed ahead of a national population counting exercise in March 2020. Longtime resident Mohamed Basiru volunteers. He was missed out of the headcount during Ghana's last census in 2010 because he was traveling. At that time, census questionnaires were on paper. It took months to gather and assemble the data, and about 3% of the population was left out of the survey. Now the government will be going digital, using tablets and satellite images to improve the reach of enumerators and make sure everyone in Ghana is counted on census night. The census is expected to cost $84 million, which is about 55% more than the last census. The government has contracted some 60,000 enumerators, but is still working with the United Nations on how best to source the 65,000 tablets required to conduct the count. Kenya is being eyed as a potential loaner after it completes its first digital census later this year. Araba Forsen is a chief statistician for the Ghana Statistical Service. She says technology will prevent enumerators from understaffing densely populated areas, a problem encountered in 2010 as the population maps they used were out of date.
Satellite imagery will tell us that there are people living in this part of the country that the enumerator may not have visited because probably didn't know that there were people living there.
Ghana's urban population has more than doubled over the past two decades, rising from 7 million in 1997 to almost 16 million in 2017. Many people have moved from poorer rural areas in search of work, joining the millions of street vendors and waste pickers who make up most of Ghana's informal economy. Together with the homeless, they are the floating population government statisticians want to capture better in their database. And the stakes are higher this time, as the census will play a key part in the nationwide rollout of biometric ID cards launched by the president in 2017. The new Ghana card requires a digital address code, many of which will be generated by enumerators during the census. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Accra.
Who stole the money from the bank? Who stole the money from the central bank? It's my money, poor people money, the money that is taken for another.
As Liberia braces for a major nationwide anti-government and anti-corruption protest on June 7th, a new hit music video entitled Who Stole the Money, a reference to the millions of dollars allegedly missing from the Central Bank of Liberia, is topping the playlist in Liberia. The artist is Rabi Nasrallah. Organizers of the June 7th protest, dubbed Save the State, say they want President George Weah to do something about what they say is Liberia's worsening economic situation and corruption. Musician Rabi Nasrallah joins us now from Monrovia. Good morning, Rabi, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored for the opportunity you have granted me.
So, Rabi, tell us, what is behind your latest hit song, Who Stole the Money? Why did you make it?
You know, as an artist and a songwriter, it is my bounden duty to speak against ills in society. I wrote the song after the government constituted investigative teams to prop into the missing money saga. But they couldn't come up with any conclusive findings, you know, as to who the real culprits were or are. This, I believe, has forced me, a high economic shift in Liberia, seeing around my environment, seeing people suffering, seeing people complaining about things that is not what it was. So it has inspired me to speak against all these things in our society.
Rabi, in your song, you keep talking about who stole the money from the central bank. So is it just about the money stolen from the central bank or corruption in general?
It's like corruption in general, including the money that is stolen from the central bank. Because if the money is stolen from the central bank, that's a very huge corruption sitting for the country proper. That's a very huge corruption, and that would eventually lead to exactly what I just listed, especially the hiking in prices, such as transportation that have increased by 50%. Price of bank of rice have increased from 1,500 to 2,005. People get turned away from hospital due to the lack of fuel and medical supplies. And bag of water that was sold for $5 is now being sold for $10. Liberty, can you imagine? The civil servants are not even taking pay on time. Gasoline prices are continuing to increase from $3.50 to like $600. Electricity is unstable. So these things have inspired me as an anti-corruption ambassador, working for both Transparency International, JMARC, and pushing corruption all around the world. It is my bounden duty to speak against this in my society, especially in Liberia where I live.
As you know, there is a protest being planned in June 7th to be specific. And part of the reasons for the protest is corruption in Liberia. Now, are you not concerned that you will be viewed here as anti-government?
The government should be wise enough to understand the fact that I won't anchor them because I'm an activist. I speak against corruption. The protest is a constitutional right of the people. If the people know that this is going bad with them, they have the right to come up and speak. And first of all, in my song, if you listen to it clearly, you understand that no one in the song was indicted. I said, who stole the money from the central bank? Even the government wants to know who stole the money from the central bank. That's what they put up an investigative team. All right? So the government shouldn't think negative about me. I'm just looking at the truth and speaking the reality of what is going on in my country and my surroundings.
Robbie, we are so happy to have you on Daybreak Africa, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, and I'm very honored. It's a pleasure. One love and big respect.
Robbie Nasrallah is the artist who made the hit music video Who Stole the Money from the Central Bank of Liberia. You're speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia.
Liberian people money is the money from the central bank, the central bank. We ask again, who stole the money from the bank? Who stole the money from the central bank? It's my money, for people money, the money that is taken for another reason. I say, who stole the money? It is all our money. The poor people money is the money from the central bank. Yeah. They cut off the roots, step on the truth, don't want the tree to bear fruit. They put a device, scatter the lies and pollute the ghetto youth. Bankrupt economy, shut down companies, make the people lost jobs. And none of this, my father, make my bread, this show no love. My papa beg for bread, mama cry for help. Politicians on the mission for corruption, they just don't care. We'll have to change the system, my people are the victims. 60 billion get missing, my youth without no evidence. So tell us, where did the money go? And how did the money flow? Someone must be held like country.
Someone must be held.
Need some investigation on this. Who stole the money from the bank?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yo.
Who stole the money from the central bank?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's my money.
For
people money.
For people money.
The money that is taken for another reason. I say, who stole the money? The central bank, the central bank. We ask again, who stole the money from the bank?
Who yagayo?
Who stole the money from the central bank?
It's
my money,
for
people money,
for people money.
Money that is taken for another reason.
Another
I say, who stole the money?
Who stole the money?
It is all our money.
It's all our money.
For people money is the money from the central bank. With corrupt connections, no transparency for corruption, no justice, no prosecution.
Robbie Nasrallah with his latest hit music video, Who Stole the Money from the Central Bank of Liberia. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thank you.